Blog Talk Radio.
Right. Call in or just listen as we discuss politics, injustices, and challenges for change in this country, communities, and in the prison system. Our guest, our regular guest on Wednesdays has been either Frans Bauw from Amsterdam, a former 27-year warden who has been in U.S. prisons visiting and has also been advocating with Advocate Texas. Also Marion Jacobs, psychosocial therapist, who has been coming on. She has been in the U.S. prisons as well as her own prisons in their countries. And unfortunately, neither of them could be on today. So I am going to be doing this special. And it's going to be surrounding politics, injustices, and challenges for changes in the country, communities, and in the penal system. Feel free to call in, listen in, or come on board and talk about some of these issues. Because right now we are in a country, as previously mentioned, that is very, very dysfunctional, very divided, and it sure could use some recommendations, some feedback. And apparently our government doesn't look to get answers from us. Our government looks or chooses to just stick with their own little cliques in making decisions for the entire country. We see a lot of that happening all over the world, unfortunately, but not as bad as it is in the U.S. Okay, hold on a second. We have so much going on in this country right now. Okay. And as I was saying, in this country, we have a lot of things going on. It's so frustrating because there's a lot that we can't do anything about. I mean, we can. We look at crime being on the rise, but no one looks at why crime is on the rise. We look at incarceration, mass incarceration, and it's still escalating, whereas there's so many, it's coming out of the seams. We look at politics, the division between the parties and the government. We look at all of this injustice and inequality going on. We look at governments who have loved ones just like we all do, who care about their sons and daughters just like we all do, and they spend all their time trying to prevent their own loved ones from going to prison when it doesn't matter if others who have done even less or the same things are serving life and life without parole, are on death row, or getting harsh sentences. Why is it so different? Why are these politicians in the government, why are they getting away with it and their loved ones getting away with it when everyone else's loved ones are out there suffering and families suffering? We look at the war between Russia and Ukraine, and we look at all the money that's being sent over there and all the weapons being sent over there from the United States of America, when in fact we have streets, homeless people. We have people without any money, without any food, without any clothing. In other countries as well, look at Sudan. Children, babies, their stomachs are swollen from starvation. Flies all up in their faces. And yet, these people are not getting help. What makes these two countries so important for our government? What makes Ukraine that important when here we have these countries in NATO, which unfortunately Ukraine is not a part of, but at the same time, we have these countries in NATO, including the United States, and the United States is sending all these weapons and all this money over there. What happened with the other countries in NATO? They backed off. You know, sometimes we put ourselves in a mess and we put others in a mess. Everybody is supposed to be accountable for their actions. Yet, unfortunately, sometimes it's other people that end up being held accountable. It's other people who end up getting messed up to the point where many are incarcerated. Many are homeless. Many are suffering. I don't take sides. I'm sorry, but I don't take sides with either Ukraine or Russia, because there are families who have their loved ones fighting wars that they shouldn't be fighting and losing loved ones as a result. A lot of these troops on both sides of the party, on both sides of the country, Ukraine and Russia, a lot of these young people don't want to be in war. They don't want to be wearing a uniform and getting killed or seeing their peers killed. But because of the government, they're forced to go to wars they don't want to go to, or maybe they don't want to be a part of, but yet they go to wars and they're getting killed. But our governments around the world, they look at this as though these troops are out there destroying their countries. They don't realize these troops are also being forced to go out and defend their countries. Either party, either side. I feel bad for the Russian families who have lost their loved ones in a war that they should not even be in. But because they're obeying their government officials, their government leaders, they're in a war getting killed. What I believe should happen is, when these wars take place, I believe it should be the presidents and the prime ministers who have the wars between themselves and leave everyone else's loved ones out of it. Whichever president, whichever prime minister or whatever, whichever one wins the battle, their country wins. But stop abusing these families, these soldiers and their families on either party, in either country, in any country. People in prison, don't keep throwing them in prison. Crime is on the rise, escalating, and people are still going to prison. But there hasn't been any discussion about releasing a lot of people, reducing sentences for people who have been in for years, people who are in their 80s and 90s, people who are in wheelchairs, dementia, Alzheimer's. What is wrong with the government? I have been bringing people on the show from other countries who have spoken so many times about the maximum sentencing that they do in their countries, which is usually 25 years, unless, again, it's serial killing or terrorism or mass shootings. Otherwise, 25 years maximum. And they also speak about the humane treatment of their prisoners. Franz Dahl from Amsterdam, a 27-year warden who made it a point, his own point, to periodically meet with some of these incarcerated people, to talk to them, treat them like human beings. This is what I'm hearing from all these countries, from all these people in leadership roles, talking about how they treat those incarcerated like human beings. They don't call them by numbers. They call them by name. They allow them to do agriculture. They allow them to do farming. And they allow them to do all these things. Of course, in this country, they allow certain ones. They pick and choose who they want to allow to participate. I can tell you that for sure, because I know the legislative members who make it a point to visit the prisons. It sure wasn't this man that they interviewed on the radio, on television. But yet he's talking about how good the Massachusetts prisons are, how good the D.C. is, the progress. This is a lie. And there are advocates in Massachusetts who will confirm that that's not so. And I'm sure it's not just in Massachusetts. I'm sure we have it around the country. This is why I always encourage people to try to get the media to go into these prisons because the media reports one-sided stories, and they interview people who are going to speak highly of the prison, of the penal system, because they have friends. They have friends in law enforcement. They have friends in the penal system and administration. I'm so sick and tired of listening to the media, especially all these young people in the media who spend more time trying to focus on themselves than addressing the news, the real news. But they're cracking jokes between them, laughing and joking, trying to get attention, dressing as though they're going to some kind of ball rather than dressing like the people should in media. But these are things that are just discouraging. But it goes to show you we're at a time now in a different era than it was before when things were running much more smoothly. We're at a time now when young people have changed so much. They've changed so much because they take sides. They try to report news that's encouraging to them. And I'll tell you, and I know that many of you will agree with what I'm about to say, but I spent all this week, I love to watch the news. I love to keep up with politics, worldwide politics as well as national. And the reason is because I am also very closely and always have been following Bible prophecy. And I see it happening now. And I'm not trying to convert anybody, but I'm saying for myself, I see all the signs of the times, everything that they said would happen in this day, in this era. But I see all these things happening. And what I'm saying is times have changed. And all this week, every station I turned on the news was about Donald Trump. Definitely all the time about Donald Trump. It was about the abortions, which that is an issue that many people feel they have to get involved with. Myself, as I always say, I believe that we have to someday go up before our maker. So I leave these personal issues up to the individuals themselves. It's between them and God. No one has a right to talk about who can or cannot have abortions. I'm not for abortions, but I'm not going to talk about somebody else's decision. And I'm going to talk about a lot of these other things that take place. People get too involved in other people's business when they better look at themselves, because they too have to go up before their maker. They're so busy judging people they don't even know. Judging people they don't even know. Allow these people who you don't know to go before their maker and deal with it that way. You know, people are in prison and hated. The population of the people on the inside, except from what they've heard from their peers, their friends, or the news, or other people that are just biased against them. There are people in prison who are really good people. And I'm not saying everybody's, there's a lot of people in prison that are evil, that are doing a lot of dirt, unfortunately. But there's a lot of good, 2.3 million people in prison. We have to look at the fact that God has his lambs amongst the wolves in the penal system too. And as I always say, he forgave Moses, a murderer. He forgave Saul, who later became the Apostle Paul, a murderer of many Christians. He forgave King David of murder as well. But yet we judge people just based on the fact that they're incarcerated. We don't look at why they went in. We don't look at the reason they went in. We don't look at the state of mind they were in. We don't look at who their peers were that might have convinced them to do these things. We don't look at the fact that they may have been victims before becoming offenders. We don't look at the fact that even though they're inside trying to serve their time without incident, that they're being oppressed, being tormented and tortured. They're being violated. They're being deprived, provoked, harassed. And we wonder why there's so many people around the country in the penal system when there's riots going on. What's causing the riots? For people, for many of you who've never been in a prison, or for many of you who listen to your peers or listen to the media, I work nationally with the incarcerated men, women, and youth. We advocated for those on death row, those on life, life without parole, those soon to be released, those with long sentences. We worked with those who have been violated and abused, provoked and harassed. We've worked with individuals who have been so beaten down, so exhausted from fighting a battle they cannot fight, trying to get help, that they've ended up committing suicide. But do we have any legislative members out there or any people out there that are feeling bad for these people that have committed suicide? Do we have anyone saying we could have helped? Do we have anyone saying it's too bad, I wish I could have done more? People that are human beings at the point where they can't cope any longer to commit suicide behind those prison walls. There's a woman, we were talking about mental health. I sent this around on social media. What about these asylums, these insane asylums that they got rid of years ago? I agree that those asylums were not healthy either. They weren't doing anything right for the mentally ill. But it doesn't mean that we can't challenge our lawmakers and our government to rebuild mental institutions as they once had around the country, rebuild them, and put people in, providers in, medical and mental health providers in that have education, that have experience, that have compassionate hearts, that are in there to help and not to make worse. Mental institutions or asylums that are transparent, and mental institutions and asylums that are monitored, which the penal system should also be monitored. Why isn't anyone in government looking at the need, the urgent need in the penal system nationwide to ensure that these prisons are overseen and that they are transparent in everything that goes on? I felt bad. One of the women on Facebook had mentioned that her son was placed in a cell with another inmate, another incarcerated individual. And she said when her son went in there, the other individual, she said, was mentally ill. He needed mental health care. She said because as soon as her son went in there, the individual started shaking. He got up behind it on the top cell, on the top bunk. He got to the corner and he was shaking. We know what that's about. Yes, that individual probably does need mental health right now, or no doubt about it, he does need mental health. But something more was going on, not with that woman's son, but with the fear in that other prisoner. If the penal system had oversight, these kinds of things wouldn't be happening. There's a lot of individuals knew now, if you knew before they went into prison, you would want to be their best friend. Though that there are people on the outside that have more. They have more money, more power, more friends, more family members, more influence. And I call a lot of them spoiled, because there's a lot of them out there that are so spoiled they know they can do what they want. And their parent, their father or their uncle or their grandfather or somebody in power is going to make it so that they don't have to do anything to serve time. But other people, their loved ones are affected to the point where their minds are messed up. They eventually, unfortunately, sometimes go to prison. something that they've done when they could no longer cope. So this is what I say about injustices in the United States. The injustices is not being done by those in the prisons. Unfortunately, not all of them in the prisons, as I say, are good. But there's a large, large population that are. They're rather wrongfully convicted that lawyers should be looking at to try to get them out of prison. Because I'll tell you, the Innocence Project, they can only do so much. Barry Heck, I ask God to bless him for starting the Innocence Project. But Barry Heck and his crew around the country is not enough because we have too many wrongfully convicted in the prisons. So the Innocence Project, the Cardoza Project, those two projects are not enough. Lawyers need to get involved around the country and try to free these wrongfully convicted. Many have already died on death row, only to find out that they were innocent after they were executed. But yet our government, because they have power, because they are in uniform or because they have titles, they're the ones that make these decisions. They don't look at, I made a big mistake, we need to do away with the death penalty. No, they don't. They don't look at, I should be held accountable. No, because they think it's okay for them to murder because of their power, because of the uniform. But it's not okay for anyone to murder. As I said, God forgave Moses, he forgave King David, he forgave Saul, who later became the Apostle Paul, all murderers. He forgave them. But he forgave them for a reason. Because first of all, they were so remorseful after doing so, for one reason. And for another reason, he took that bad that was in them to do what they did, and he turned it into a powerful thing. He used them. And many of you who read the Bible will find it in the Bible. Not only in the Christian Bible, but also in the Torah and the Quran. It speaks about Moses, David, the Apostle Paul later in Christian Bible. But we have to look at our government. They have murdered exceedingly in these death penalty cases that were later found out to be innocent. I don't know what to tell everyone. I don't know what to say. But I do know one thing. I can't be a part of it all. I have to speak out. And for every one of you out there in the audience listening, for every advocate, for every family member of any loved one incarcerated, sitting back and letting others do the work is not the answer. Sitting back and keeping quiet is not the answer. Because we, as long as we sit back and allow these things to happen without even trying to come together in solidarity to do something about it, we're just as guilty as those people behind the bars. And we're just as guilty as our government lawmakers. And for many of you, it hasn't happened to you. Believe me, God has a way of bringing us closer to him. And sometimes it's through our own traumas and tragedies. Sometimes we go through just as much as they on the inside, so that God will get our attention to what we need to do to make matters better, not worse. I feel bad because there's a lot of people who have loved ones inside that I see on Facebook all the time, on social media all the time, complaining about it, complaining about their loved ones being inside. They're looking, a lot of them looking for pity for themselves. A lot of them looking for attention for themselves. They forget that it's not about them. It's not about us. It's about our loved ones inside. It's about getting help for them. Whether we have to do it individually or whether we have to do it in groups, however we have to do it. But it's not about ourselves. And this is what happens a lot of times. People are always looking for attention for themselves. And when negative things happen to them, what do? They write to their loved ones or they talk on the phone with their loved ones, crying about what's happening with them, or who they don't get along with, or who's doing this, or who's doing that. Your loved ones don't want to hear that. They want some encouraging news. They want to hear that something good is happening. And if we can have something good happening by working in unity to ensure that we're doing something, we can at least report to our loved ones that this is happening. We're coming together in unity. We're writing legislative members. We're making phone calls. We're emailing to try to reduce the sentences, to try to abolish the death penalty, to try to abolish solitary confinement and life without parole. Families for mandatory minimums, they do a lot of good. FAMM, F-A-M-M, join them. They do a lot of good. I wish more organizations like them, Innocence Project, the Cardoza Project, Families Against Mandatory Minimums, Families, Friends, and Individuals for the Mentally Ill. These are the kind of programs that are out there that are people coming together, a lot of family members coming together and joining these groups to do some positive work. So for those of you out there crying about yourselves, try joining these organizations. You're not buying into memberships. You're joining groups or organizations that are appropriately trying to resolve the issues of mass incarceration, trying to resolve the issues of life and life without parole, trying to resolve issues of death penalty, trying to resolve the issues that go on behind the prison walls. Riots are not always initiated because of the bad prisoners. Riots start out because nothing's being done when prisoners are asking for change, positive change. I've been told by prisoners around the country about these riots, and some of these riots, they say, is because the prisoners would ask the prison officials to look at a correctional officer that's causing problems, or some correctional officers that are causing problems. And what they're told is that they're told they have to deal with it. They're not going to make any changes. You don't have to deal with it. Then we have the hunger strikes. People going on hunger strikes because there's a lot of things going on that they want you to hear. They want the public to know, but the public is showing no interest at all. So they try to get the attention by acting out in some way, whether it's a hunger strike, whether it's a riot. This is the only reason these things happen. Wake up, audience. Wake up, people. They don't riot just because they want to riot. There's a lot of people out there rioting between their gang members, between their rivals. But when you have a lot of prisoners throughout the country coming together to riot because of a certain cause or a certain thing that's happening that shouldn't be happening, they're trying to get the attention of the media. They're trying to get the attention of the public, members of society. But unfortunately, we have so many people out there judging, including the media, including many members of society, that are so busy judging that maybe if they open their ears and listen to what these incarcerated individuals, men, women, and youth, have to say, maybe you'll start to understand and fight for them, fight for their rights so they don't have to cause riots, so they don't have to go on hunger strikes, so they don't have to commit suicide. And we all know people overseeing, whether law enforcement, correctional officers, prison officials, commissioners, or wardens, whatever they want to be called, we all know they're human beings too. And they also have the ability or the capability of becoming criminals. Many already are, but that's being overlooked by members of society because these people are in uniform or have power. We have to look at, and the internet, one of the good things about computers nowadays and internets is that you can go on the internet and you can type in murders by law enforcement, or beatings or murders by correctional officers, you can find out how drugs are getting into the prison or prisons around the country by typing in drugs caught, guards caught smuggling drugs inside, or drugs getting into the prisons by the SEALs or correctional officers or guards. You can find all this. And it's not as though these prisoners are telling you anything you shouldn't already know. But if everyone takes their eyes off prisoners being so evil and tries to put their eyes on how these things are happening in the prisons. In 2020, there was a riot at one of the prisons in Massachusetts, January 10th. And I remember that day to the T because I was on the phone earlier with my one. There was a riot at the prison. And after they moved all of those prisoners off of that block and out of that prison, they went on an unprovoked attack on all prisoners. And you can find that by going on the internet and typing in unprovoked attack in Massachusetts prison. And you will see what happened. Several lawyers took those prisoners that were unprovokedly attacked. They took 40 of them when there were much, much more. Some of them still have not been able to get the help from 2020. But some of these lawyers took these 40 and filed a lawsuit. It's still in court from what I gather. Long process, but it's still in court. 40 people, but a lot of these prisoners went to the hospital with broken bones. Many of them taken off of their blocks that they have been on for years. And they were also sprayed. They were also attacked, many attacked by dogs. They were attacked, beaten, moved to blocks they shouldn't have been on, many on restrictive blocks and solitary confinement. They didn't deserve it because they didn't start the riot. They had nothing to do with the riot. But we have people in power who use their powers and their uniforms to become criminals. They were the criminals in these cases. Not that they were overseers, but in these cases, once they moved those prisoners out that caused the riot, they had no business going after all the other prisoners who had nothing to do with it, that were in their cells or whatever, minding their own business. But that's what we have going. Now in politics, I want to say sometimes, and this goes with prison situations as well, there are many people, families of loved ones incarcerated who are being, the incarcerated individuals are being abused or violated. There's a lot of families that have promised, they made promises by our government leaders, our politicians. Those promises around election time are fine, but after election, these people, in many cases, get ignored. Politicians that I really admire because they've been going into the prisons, they've been meeting with the prisoners. A situation that recently happened when a senator went to the prison, she had already let the incarcerated know that they want to be coming to this prison. So when she came, they put these incarcerated individuals in a holding cell. And as one went to meet with the senator, the other one would follow suit, and it would go like that. And there was a list of everyone that was supposed to be meeting with her. But what happened is some of those prisoners were sent back to their cells. Their names were never called. And the senator never knew that they had been let out to meet with her. You have prisoners, people incarcerated, who have been placed on restrictive housing blocks or put in solitary confinement on bogus charges. And you contact legislative members, and they say they're going to help. Do you know sometimes legislative members, government employees, have about as much power as we do as nobodies, as families of loved ones incarcerated, or of advocates, or people that own organizations, have organizations for the prisoner advocacy work? There's a lot of legislative members that don't have that much power, and it's only because they challenge the Department of Corrections. I want to say there was an incident where I myself got so frustrated one time. Called the congressman, congresswoman's office. And I was upset because the aide was supposed to be helping on a case and kept saying that we're not giving up on this one. We're not giving up on this one. And then all of a sudden, no one heard anything. Plus, the names keep changing. I go by the same name all the time, but sometimes these aides, they have one name, 1 minute, and the next name, the next minute, you're hearing or seeing a different first name. But parents, I can understand why families get discouraged and get disgusted. And sometimes they finally go off and they say, you know what? I've learned a lesson. I voted for you thinking that you were going to help because this is what you kept saying. And it can be a congresswoman, a congressman. It could be a senator. It could be a state rep. It could be anybody. I was brought up that if you make a promise to someone, you're going to keep it. I was brought up that my word is gold, and everybody that knows me can confirm that when I say something, I don't back up. I'm very assertive. I speak my piece. I don't make a lot of enemies, but I don't make a lot of friends either. Because in this day and age, in this world today, people want you to either agree with what they say, keep your mouth shut, don't say anything, or else we're not going to associate with you. Well, I hate to say it, but I could care less. Because as I said, my word is gold. I was brought up, to be honest. And if people took time out to ask questions instead of assuming that other people are bad or different or troublemakers or whatever the case may be, if we take, and I tell everyone, because this is where I am, I don't judge. I ask a lot of questions. I remember when I was in the first grade, my mother and father went to the school, parent-teacher association, or checking out what the kids in school did, whatever the case may be. I remember my mother telling me one time, Mrs. Child said to me, Mrs. Brandel, she said, we love Leona Daly. She's a very nice young lady, but there's one problem. And my mother said, what is that, Miss Childs? She said, Leona doesn't know when to shut up. And that's been me ever since I was a child. But what I have to say, a lot of people want to hear. They want to listen because it makes sense. I don't talk about lizards and fish. I don't talk about boats and houses and who did my hair, hairdressers. I don't talk about the golf course. A lot of these news reporters joke about it because somebody is fortunate enough to report news from a golf course. I talk about the things that the media hides. I talk about the things that a lot of our government employees don't talk about. They want so much to be accepted by people in society that they leave out the most important things that God wants them to do, and that is to help the lost and rejected, the abused and deprived and the violated, the provoked and the harassed, the dying, the lonely ones. That's what I talk about. I have no use for golf courses. I have no use for money or power or fame. I have no use to make friends because I'm not that insecure, as many of our leaders are, as many of the advocates are. I've been around the public too many years to want to be around a lot of people to lift my ego. I speak with people from other countries who talk about the United States of America and the reason they don't succeed. And if any of you have listened to past interviews that I've had with people from other countries, they will tell you the United States is about power, about money, greed, about racism, about hatred, about retaliation. Where does the United States have any room to talk about caring and compassion? Second chance. People that are raised in homes that teach them about hatred, that teach them about racism, that teach them about greed and power. Those kind of homes, I hate to say it, but the parents are so busy focusing on the unnecessary that they forget to use that time to show that love, compassion, and caring for their children as they're raising them, teaching them to love one another. I was taught never to make fun of anyone other than myself. Never make fun of anybody who is different, who is disabled, who is of different color, of a different religion. Never. That was a no-no in our home. But yet it has become a thing of the United States of America. Why? Just like I say with Donald Trump, I don't blame Donald Trump for the way he is. I don't blame him for being a racist. I don't blame him for being confused or childish or retaliative or vengeful. I blame whoever raised him. And I see the same thing happening in the future with his little boy who is autistic. I have never seen in all the time that Donald Trump has been in office, and even now that he's not in office, I've never seen him holding his son's hand. I've never seen his son in between the husband and the wife, but the son was always trailing behind. That's going to happen when that child gets older, if he ever gets married. The same thing will be in his family, because that's the way Donald Trump was raised. And that's the way a lot of people in this country are raised, to find fault with other people instead of focusing on own issues. And how can anyone go to church or go to a synagogue or go to a mosque? How can anybody, or go to a Kingdom Hall, how can anybody go do these things, claim they're Christians or they're godly, and yet decide to push on their own within that little culture, or choose to judge other religions when they have not even been in other religions to find out? I've been in them all. I made it my point to participate in a lot of these different places, because if I was going to judge, I can at least say I've been there. I know what it's about. What I have found is that all of these religions have some good in them, and a lot of them are pretty much trying to get the same message out, or they might not be getting the message out, but that's what's in their Bibles, their mosques, their Qurans, their Torahs, whatever the case may be. There's a message in there that relates to every single Bible out there. Now, this thing with what's going on, getting back to politics, what's going on with Donald Trump right now, I know a lot of you are probably, like myself, fed up with watching the news every single day, hearing the same old, same old, same old. What I wish they would do everything that they need to do, everything they feel they need to do, to either get this man arrested and put in prison like anybody else that's done wrong, or close it up and let it go. But I wish they would do all of this in the background so that we're not wasting our time trying to get news only to hear about the same old, same old. And after they've made their decision, then they can come forward and they can let us know what their decision has been. This is a man they call into court. They're going to arrest him. They go in, get his fingerprints without anybody seeing him, and back out again. His lawyers handle everything. What case does that? We're not looking at titles. We're looking at human beings. We're looking at individuals. It's sickening when we're paying for our television, our internet service, we're paying for all these things only to have to be focused because there's nothing else to address, because everything they're showing on the news is the same old thing that we've seen 7 years ago. Taking up everybody's time and giving others an opportunity to rebuild their troops, to rebuild their cool, or rebuild whatever they're doing to be sure they're going to be prepared on a day of judgment in this world. Not with God, but a day of judgment in this world. So I wish they would stop reporting all this news. Let these courts do what they have to do, and these attorneys do what they have to do, and then let everybody in the country know, or the world know, the results and the final arrest or the final dismissal. What we have to do. It's sickening. It's like this country is being run by children. And this country is, in fact, being run by children. Now, we have a situation everybody's hearing about with immigrants bombarding. Right now, there's such an influx of immigrants. Even in Massachusetts, they were talking about not knowing what to do because there's so many. If they allow the people to speak out, I'd like to recommend something. You know, there are buildings in the United States of America that are dilapidated, that are not being used, that are not being renovated, that are not being done with anything but making the community a sore eye. I remember, and it's still there, years ago when I first started my organization, I went to City Hall to see if there's any way to actually for them to donate that building. That building is so big, it could not only house all of those immigrants or the big majority of those immigrants, but it would also be able to put offices in there where they could go for mental health treatment, addictions, substance abuse treatment, occupational therapy to help them to get situated and file for jobs. And there's a lot of people, my traveling, my being in a lot of these countries, there's a lot of people in these countries that already know how to build, that already know how to do carpentry work. They know how to fix things up. They know how to do plumbing. So instead of complaining about these immigrants coming over here and getting all these benefits for nothing, why doesn't our government take them to all of these buildings across the country, these dilapidated buildings, and allow them, give them the tools to work with, allow them to build or to renovate these buildings, allow them to build it, renovate these buildings and build their own little studios or whatever in these big unused buildings. The government has a lot of surplus properties in the country that are not being used. It's the simple things. You know, this is the thing about third world countries. They know how to survive. They know how to make something of nothing. People, even when I traveled when I was in an African country, there were these little clay huts that they used to make. And these clay huts also had seating. There's a lot of things that these immigrants could be doing to help build and improve the communities while having a place to stay. Our governor is asking for more money. And money to provide a certain amount to get the supplies to help these immigrants to build or renovate these buildings. We have vocational, although school is not in session right now. We have people that are in school, to vocational school, to learn how to do carpentry by the vocational school. All of them would come in at different times. The masons, the plumbers, the carpenters, the electricians, they'd come in with their teachers. One house a year. I remember my house was the last house to be built back in 1972. It was a three-bedroom, living room, kitchen, and bath. Throughout the years, I put a lot into it. Throughout the years, I had two more bedrooms put in the basement and a living room, and I was working on the kitchenette and the bathroom when a tragedy happened in my life, and everything was put on hold. And as a result, I sold a home that initially cost me $11,000. Throughout the years, I may have put in probably another $40,000. The house was sold for $250,000. And the only reason the house was sold is because when I came back from overseas traveling, in spite of the tragedy that it entered into our life, my own, another relative had taken everything I had. So everybody has a situation in their lives. Everybody. And let's not just look at our own situation, but let's look at everybody. Because I'm sure everyone in this country and around the world has been affected in some way by members of society, and including family members and friends and strangers. We have to remember there's victims. There's victims behind those prison walls, victims who became offenders. There's victims who were victimized in the communities. There's victims in the families of those victims and those victimized offenders. Everybody is going through something. We should not be judging one another. We should not be judging one another at all. We should be trying to understand what these people were going through, what caused them to fall, and how we can make things better by working together in solidarity and unity to try to find answers. Hating is not the answer. And taking sides with people you know who have been hurt or victimized, taking sides is not going to help. Remaining neutral and being there to support them is the best way to go. Because the person that did it, and let's look back, cultures is a big thing in the manner of which people operate, in the manner of which people fall or stumble. Many of us were brought up decent, with decent parents, in an average community, with a home, with siblings, with a lot of love. And then there's others who were brought up in the cities, in the streets of New York or Boston, in the streets, in the homes of parents who were heavily addicted, or in the homes of parents there was a lot of domestic violence. A lot of them, because of their race, being approached by the police all the time as soon as they go out their door. A lot of them who were violated as children or adolescents, who were abused or violated. A lot of them who had no role models. A lot of them who had no siblings and no fathers. There are so many reasons, so many different areas we have to look at when we think about crime. When there's no role models and two people going through the same thing get together, and then others join them that are going through the same thing, what do you expect to happen? All of these kids are going to come together, or these young people, these adolescents come together, and they're all full of anger and frustration because of the way they're being raised or the way they have to raise themselves. And that is what causes a lot of disasters. And then you have a lot of vulnerable individuals, vulnerable girls and boys or men and women, who get used by people who have been around. Women cheat and lie and deceive, or men who cheat and lie and deceive. And before you know it, something's going to happen. Something is definitely going to happen. Especially when they're vulnerable and they finally trust someone enough to disclose something detrimental, something traumatic that happened to them as they were growing up, something that they kept a secret all those years. And then they finally meet someone that they fall in love with, that they think they can trust, and they open up their hearts to that person. They open up their hearts, they open up their homes, they open up everything to that person, only to find out that that person, those individuals, whether it man or female, those people were using them, laughing at them, lying to them, deceiving them, in back of their faces. These are the things that happen. And I just want everyone to know, again, that we're living in a country that is looked upon by other countries as being a farce. For many of you that don't know what a farce is, it's a joke. And I look at this country as being a joke because we have a lot of people that think they're educated, and they may be educated, running the country. But that education does nothing for anyone unless along with that education is experience, life experience, and wisdom. Wisdom is something that lacks in this country. Life experiences is something that lacks in this country. Education is something that is a lot of people have, and that's why they're in roles. But a piece of paper does nothing for anybody. Nothing. You can say to someone if you've been there and done it. But a lot of these colleges, when they teach, they fail to teach something. They fail to teach about cultures. United States of America. These universities, these colleges and universities that are teaching people going to school to get their bachelor's or their master's or even their associate degree. Those that are going to school for criminal justice, law, going to school for social work, going to school for psychology, whatever the case may be. A lot of them are not teaching about cultures because they assume that everybody, because they're human beings, everybody is the same. Everybody should think the same. And if you notice the media, when you watch these media reporters, every one of them, they stand the same, they talk the same, they laugh the same. It's almost like they're robots. When you go to college and universities for whatever degree you're going for, you should be taught about cultures. You should be taught about religions. You should be taught about behavior. You should be taught to look for, and this is what I tell people all the time, body language tells a lot. Look at cultures. Look at the body language. Look at the person's past, present, and current, past and current situations. Were they in trouble before? What kind of reputation did they have before the crime? What were their friends like? There are some people in prison who have friends they went to school with, they went to college with. Now, these kind of friends, they might come from good homes, but those homes did not teach anything about wisdom or loyalty because these individuals never asked once why their friend did what they did or he did or she did. They never took the time to meet with that person to find out what happened. Because these people were not taught to look at body language. They were not taught to be neutral in situations. They were not taught about cultures. That's what's lacking in the United States of America. And I'll tell you another thing, in my travel to other countries, I was told before I even left the country about all the unsafe countries that I was going to, that I should never travel alone to these countries. The only country I have ever found to be violent, to be dangerous, to be racist, to be hateful, to be greedy, to be vengeful, to be everything, and that's the United States of America. Other countries will treat you with greatest respect. And for all of those who are judging Ukraine or judging Russia or judging Iran or judging Iraq or judging Sudan or judging whatever these countries are, Pakistan, Israel, we have to realize one thing. You don't know anything about these countries, so how can you judge them? It's like the churches or the mosque or the synagogues. You don't know anything about them if you haven't been there, but yet people in this country are quick to judge. Quick to judge. And I want to say one last thing. When people talk about Israel, people forget it's been thousands, thousands, and thousands of years. You know that land changes a lot. Borders have changed. I remember on Cape Cod, there were only 13 colonies. Now we're talking about different towns, different everything. Everyone looks at Israel as though Israel's been in the same spot for all these thousands of years. The spots have moved around. The borders have moved around. There's been changes. It's like the daylight saving times. We have daylight saving times where clocks go. What is it, fall behind and spring ahead. So in March, the clocks change ahead of time. And in the fall, it changes behind times. And what did those times do to this system of things? It throws everything off. So when people think, they have to look at this as well, that those continents, those countries, and remember when the world first started, Africa and the Middle East were all one continent. It wasn't called Africa in the Middle East. It was all one continent, though. After the flood, those two continents split. And throughout the years, people migrated. This country, the United States of America, was the last one to come up. This continent. So if everyone thinks by worshiping a country or one country or another, forget it, because we don't know what those countries were thousands of years. We know what they are now, and they may be in the wrong spot, and everybody's still calling it by what they thought it was years ago. Wake up, people. Times have changed. You know, we're coming to an end of a system that people are not aware of. And this end of the system is, these things all need to come out, because people are so ignorant of the, and I don't mean ignorant as mental. I mean ignorant as uninformed. And that's why we're shedding light, bringing awareness. I want to thank all of you for listening in. And I'm hoping and praying that you start checking into a lot of these things that are mentioned. It's very important. Your life or your loved one's life, mentality, physically, spiritually, whatever it might be, depends on awareness. And I hope and pray that all of you, what you heard today, you try to learn more about those incarcerated, try to help in some way or another by joining Families Against Mandatory Minimum, FAM. It's on the internet. And individuals for the mentally ill, or any of them, and try to encourage, challenge the Department of Mental Health to get more involved, because the Department of Mental Health has not been involved in the prison system. Yet the prisons are being filled up with people who have committed offenses when they have been under some kind of emotional or addiction. And a lot of people are addicted not because they have fun drinking or drugging. A lot of them do it to cover up their own traumas and tragedies. They may not talk about it. They may not agree. But the majority of them have been through something, and their only way out is through addiction. Please contact the Department of Mental Health. Please try to get them involved, because some of the people they are treating on the outside are worse than those on the inside. And yet the Department of Mental Health, for some reason, doesn't want to seem to get involved, because they've already judged all the incarcerated as being not worthy to have any help from them. And that is a shame. So thank you all for paying attention. Thank you for listening in. Please call in sometime, anytime. Try to become more involved, because as we see, people talk issues. They judge themselves enough. And yet, we have the opportunity, anyone, to speak. Well, not everybody can always do it for you. It didn't happen to you, any of you, in your situations with your own loved ones. So we are now signing off. I thank you all for listening in, and I bid you a fair good day.